This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Hey, yes, welcome to The Garden Show on Zoomer Radio. I am Dean Holland and joined by the delightful and a half Charlie Dobbin. How are you this morning?
Good morning. I'm holding on. It's been so windy here. It's been crazy, and we'll talk a little bit about that. But yeah, it's nice that the sun is shining and it is cooled off, which is nice.
It has, about in Collingwood here where I am, about 10, 11 degrees, I think, right now.
Exactly the same here, which is kind of a nice break from what felt extremely hot a couple of days ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great day for Winnie the Pooh. It's a blustery day out there.
Good point, yeah.
Yeah. How's your week been? Good?
Yes, reasonably good. But like I said, it's been super windy. We did have about an 8-hour power failure on Thursday. But the great irony of all that is that we also had a generator installed on Tuesday. And you say to yourself, well, that should be perfect. But of course, it's not, because the generator came with a faulty regulator. So I have a generator sitting out there taking up space on the land, but it is non-functional. So that was a little frustrating.
that is a shame, especially when you had it installed just very recently. Yikes.
Waiting on a part. Yep.
We don't like that. No, we had lots of wind here, too. Things blowing around. Not as bad as some of the pictures that my wife Gail and I saw on the, on the internet this morning. Mm-hmm. I guess to the east.
Yes.
Certainly eastern Ontario and into Quebec had some pretty hefty wind damage.
But, yeah, like roofs blew off, trees came down. Yeah, here on Thursday when the power failure started, the sirens started right after that. And a lot of it, I think, was limbs and trees that came down. And so, of course, all kinds of emergency services were dispatched to bring their chainsaws.
Yeah, well, maybe this is a question that we can pose to our listeners today, or our callers, because, of course, we get callers from all over Ontario. So, you know, it's windy when blank, 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 right?
Uh-huh. And so I can fill in one quick blank for you there. At my place, you know, it's windy when the bird bath has white caps on it. I was getting wet.
Love that.
Standing 10 feet away from my bird bath, the water was blowing out and getting me wet. It was crazy. Oh, that was yesterday.
White caps on the bird bath. That
exactly.
Top marks. I don't know that I can come up with anything better than that. You know what I can come up with is the phone numbers, because we need to, we want to open those lines up. Actually, we've already got some callers on the line. Anywhere in Toronto, 416-360-0740, or toll-free anywhere else in the province of Ontario, 1-866-740-4740. And this morning, we want you to let Duncan know that you are the first time caller. Yeah. And we will give you your garden wings. There you go. Because Carlos has been running. He ran a marathon. And so he's got the day off, and we have Duncan here. Please call often, call early, and one question per call, please. And right now we're going to take a quick break, but we will be back with more on The Garden Show. Okay, welcome back to The Garden Show on Zoomer Radio. I'm Dean Holland, here with Charlie Dobbin. And Charlie, we have callers on the line already. We're going to get right to that. We're going to go to Sandra in Etobicoke. Welcome to The Garden Show, Sandra.
Good morning, Charlie, Dean. I know it's windy because my lawn is covered in pine cones.
Okay, there you go. Top marks.
My question, Charlie, is regarding sage and its problem is spreading to the oregano. The leaves have what look like little brown spots on them, but if I hold the leaf up to the light, it's opaque. I can see through them. It hasn't been eaten through. Mm. I have seen some little bugs. They are black with yellow stripes. Two or three of them.
They're like little beetles, right?
Yeah, like a little beetle, yes.
Yeah, that actually is a problem when it comes to cucumbers, that little bug, but it shouldn't... Not much chews on sage. just because it's so pungent, if you will. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons we, okay, so if it's spots on the leaves, it's usually from overwatering or underwatering, but more likely overwatering. Is that a possibility?
Not really, because that herb bed, I haven't really watered it. There's a lot of mulch on it, I haven't watered it.
Okay, so make sure the mulch is not touching the plants. It's fine to have 2 to 4 inches of mulch on the surface of the soil around the plants, but go down on your hands and knees and make sure there's no mulch actually coming up close and touching the stems of the plants, because that will contribute to all kinds of too much moisture retention, which even could be happening right now if there's too much mulch. So just be aware of that.
Mulch is touching the stems, yes. I'll remove that.
Yeah, and then that way you have better sun penetration, air circulation, and those spots should stop happening. They won't disappear on the leaves that they're on, but eventually new leaves will grow, and those new leaves should be clean and clear.
It's only on a few of them, and I've been cutting them off. It's fairly old mulch. I didn't put new mulch on this year, and it's a little compact. Should I be trying to break them? You know how the mulch will sometimes compact?
I don't know. I mean, if you want, it's the kind of thing you could just like with your hands and gloves, just break it up a bit, because mulch can make such a firm surface that water actually is repelled from the garden rather than getting in between the bark chips. Mm-hmm. So, you know, loosening it up with a rake or your hands might be a good idea if you feel that it's just too compacted.
Okay, so it's no need. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Sandra.
Oh, I love you.
Yeah, thanks. Good luck with your parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme.
Hey, so I know it's windy at my house, but
what
she said about the pine cones.
Yeah.
I step outside. My plants with flowers suddenly are denuded of all their petals. All the petals blew off.
And that's a shame when you're waiting this long, right? Our peonies. I posted some pictures of our peonies, which are just glorious this year. We're having a particularly good year, but of course, whenever the rain comes down, which we've avoided that, but now they're dodging the wind. Yeah,
exactly. For sure.
Yeah. So if it isn't one thing, it's another. Okay, let's go to our next caller. We have Jane in Chatham. Welcome to the Garden Show, Jane. Good morning, Jane.
Hello.
Morning.
Hey there.
I have plants that, all different kinds of plants, dahlias, different ones, they all have holes in the leaves. And you mentioned something last week that could be sprayed on them.
Well, it depends what's eating. So holes, like a shotgun has been shot through the leaves?
Like the edges are all chewed off.
Oh, the edges. Okay. So you said dahlias. What else?
I don't know the name of it. It's a new plant. I couldn't tell you.
Okay.
Actually,
my neighbor brought one over to show me yesterday that is very consistent right now, this time of year, often found on roses, but certainly will chew from the outside margins, the leaves of almost every plant. And it's almost invisible because it's a perfectly camouflaged little caterpillar that's green, and it matches the green of the leaves that it's chewing. It's called a sawfly, so S-A-W, fly, sawfly larva. But the product that you can use on any of the larvae that are eating any of your foliage is 3 letters, B as in Bob, T as in Tom, and K as in kite. So BTK, available at any garden center now, or any of the big box stores probably have it as well. Follow the instructions. Spray it on the surface of the leaves of plants that are getting chewed. It makes the surface poisonous. And then the caterpillars come along and start chewing, and they ingest some of this poison. It's actually a bacteria, and it's a stomach poison for them. The cool thing about BTK is that it doesn't hurt anything else. The birds, the birds, bees, cats, dogs, people, nobody is affected by this except insects that swallow it.
Okay.
You don't see these caterpillars, obviously.
Well, if you look really, really closely, right along the margin, right along the edge of the leaf where you're seeing some of the tissue is missing, look really closely, you'll probably see a green caterpillar lying right in that, along that edge, chewing away. But tiny, right? The size of maybe a quarter of an inch long, like a small little green guy.
Okay.
Yeah. Good luck with that, Jane. Never fun when we find stuff eating our leaves, is it?
Not at all.
No, very frustrating.
Hey, just a quick aside.
Yeah, for sure.
One of the things I've recommended to people for years is consider growing garlic around your plants that are very susceptible to insect infestation. So a classic would be roses. Roses at this time of year, sawfly, like Jane was just talking about, larva. Aphids, this is the time of year. Check your roses for aphids, the growing tips, and other plants that are just, very, very tasty because of all that nice new growth. This year, for the first time ever, I do have garlic growing all around my roses. I planted multi-garlic bulbs around my roses, and touching wood, keeping my fingers crossed, there are no insects on my roses whatsoever. Okay. No sawflies, no aphids, and both my neighbors on both sides of me brought me examples of aphids and sawflies that are on their plants, but my garlic is doing its job and protecting my roses.
Gotcha. Well, I love a good garlic too, so that's a good advice. We have to take a quick break, but we will be back with much more right here on The Garden Show.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Oh, yeah, back with The Garden Show here. I'm Dean Holland with Charlie Dobbin. And I want to give those numbers out again before we resume going. Anywhere in Toronto, 416-360-0740, or anywhere else, toll-free in the province of Ontario, 1-866-740-4740. And we are going to go right now to Barb in Hamilton. Good morning. Welcome to The Garden Show, Barb.
Good morning. I hope you're both well.
Yes.
I talked to Charlie before, quite a few years ago. I'm glad to be able to speak to her again. It seems to me you had a recipe with dish soap for dealing with insects on a plant. And I have a couple of lily plants. And I thought it was just, with all the wind, I thought it was just spots of dirt on the plant. But when I took a closer look, it was some sort of bug, but it was soft. I took it off, and then it looked black. And I checked the leaves, and they were on all the leaves, and were actually eating some of the leaves. Mm-hmm. And then I went in the house because I couldn't remember the recipe you had. But I thought, well, maybe dish soap will work. So I bought the dish soap out, and I put I washed the whole plant down. I washed every leaf with the dish soap. Mm-hmm. And it was only two plants involved, thank God. But anyway, now I've looked out since I've done that, and I was very careful. Also, after I got all those black ones off, I noticed there were a little brown. I guess they might have been worms. But anyway, they were very soft.
Yeah. So what's going on? And you're not the only one, because I had a couple of emails on this too. So thanks for the call, because this is a good question. Anybody with lilies, like not daylilies, but real lily plants, is likely to have this problem. And the insect is called a red lily leaf beetle. So the adult is a bright red beetle. Like, you can't miss them. They're just amazingly red. If you touch the plant with the red beetles on the plant, they drop to the ground and they drop onto their backs, and their bellies are black. So when they drop down, you can't see them because they meld into the soil. But when they're on the plant, they're very obvious. And like I say, they'll abandon the plant very quickly if you touch the plant. The baby version, or the juvenile version, of the lily leaf beetle is a rather disgusting little slug-like or caterpillar-like insect. Not very attractive, just brown. But what they do, which is so smart, they actually cover themselves with their own feces. So you don't see the caterpillar. You see what looks like poop. It could be bird poop. It's just a blob of soft mush. But under that blob is an insect that's eating your lily plant, and it will eat every part of the plant, leaves, buds, flowers, petals, and they're voracious. They'll just destroy your plants. So you're right. I was given a recipe from, and I just looked it up here. One of our listeners, her name is Wilma, so she's listening. Good morning, Wilma, who lives in Holstein. She gave us this recipe, and it is on my website. So I'm going to tell you right now what the recipe is. If you want to check it, you know, the written word, go to charliedobbin.com and look under tips, and you will find this recipe. And what it is mixing water, straight old water, 2 teaspoons of dish soap, not dish detergent, but dish soap, plus a teaspoon of oil, any old oil, but a lighter oil is better. So I wouldn't recommend olive oil, more like a corn oil or canola oil. All that goes into a spray bottle. So soap, water, and oil into a spray bottle. Then spray the insects as soon as you see them. From the moment you start seeing them, start spraying them. And the soap and the oil should stick to the insects, and it should suffocate them. There it is.
Okay, there, Barb. So that's the recipe, and good luck with those little critters. And that actually, it's obviously not a Hamilton problem exclusively, because you got an email from Kathy in Oshawa, I think, earlier regarding the exact same thing.
Exactly. And it's a really, really distinctive insect. Like when the adults are on the plants, they are blazing red. So if you see anything red or any blobs on your lilies, get out there, either pick them. One of the things I do is I just lay newspaper on the ground and then shake the plant, and they all fall off the plant. But you catch them when they land on the newspaper instead of having them land in the soil and then climb back up.
Gotcha. Okay. Actually, our next question on the line is something that I actually had a question. I gazed up at my lilac, and I had a question that Leslie from Cookstown is going to ask you right now. Welcome to the Garden Show, Leslie.
Thank you. Good morning, Dean. Good morning, Charlie.
Good morning.
Yes, I have the front of my house. I love lilacs, so I've planted quite a few lilacs that line the front of my property. Well, now they've finished, and they're getting a little large. And I'm wondering the best time to prune them.
Okay, so it's a great question, and your timing is good. The rule of thumb is when a plant is finished flowering is when we prune it. Because if you prune before it flowers, then you'll end up pruning off the flowers. So in order to maximize the ornamental value of plants like lilacs, wait until they're finished flowering. So now is the time. If nothing else, get your pruners out and take off the flowers that are now crispy on the tips of the branches. They will set seeds. They're going to put a lot of energy into setting seeds, and you don't probably want to start a lilac nursery, so you don't want those crispy flowers there, nor do you want seeds there. So nothing else, get those off. How big are the trees? How tall are they when you said they're getting a bit big?
Well, you know, they've now hit 5 feet, and I think that's where they're supposed to be, but they're getting very wide, so they're taking over the walkway.
Do you know what kind of lilacs they are?
Dwarf, that's all I have. They're a light purple. They're very fragrant.
They all are. So what you have to do, you have to look at where these are getting too wide, get down on your hands and knees, follow the branches that are encroaching onto your walkway, and follow those branches down to where they're coming from the main stem, and get out your pruners and cut them off at the main stem. Okay. If you shear the plant by giving it a haircut and, you know, doing that little poodle cut thing, they will just get wider. So you don't want them wider. You want them, the natural form should be a vase shape for a lilac, so narrow at the base, and not super wide, but, you know, the shape of a V or a vase. But the way we achieve that natural form and keep the lilacs in check is by doing our pruning right from the base.
From the base. Okay. Oh, that's great information. Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks so much for the call there, Leslie. Okay. I was looking up at my lilac just 2 days ago, and I had the same question. I thought, should I trim all those old blossoms off now? Yeah. So now's the time.
Yeah, for sure. And also now is the time to shape the plant if it's getting too big or you know, growing only on one side, whatever. This is our opportunity for shaping and right. and for health reasons, of course, too.
Okay. Those numbers, once again, anywhere in Toronto, please give us a call, 416-360-0740, or toll-free anywhere else in the province of Ontario. The number is 1-866-740-4740. We are now going to St. Catharines. We have Linda on the line. Welcome to the Garden Show, Linda.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be on.
Morning.
Oh, first time caller. I got your garden wings there.
Thank you.
There you go. Garden wings for Linda. What do you got for Charlie?
I'm calling in regards to a white silk lilac tree that was planted in early May. And when it was first planted, I noticed that a few leaves were slightly puckered and curled and had like the edge seemed to be chewed out. And I pointed that out to the nursery that I bought the tree from, and they indicated to me that that was likely frost that had caused that. Since then, I've noticed that more of the leaves on the tree, actually completely around right to the top, are showing the same. They're curled, they're puckered. The leaves look like they've been chewed out, but there's no evidence of any bugs or insects. It was planted with good triple mix soil that was mixed in with the actual clay soil that's there. It was staked, it's been watered, and I'm just concerned what's happening to this tree. Am I going to lose it? What do I need to do?
You know what? That's a good question. And there's no evidence of any insects.
No. I've looked day, I've looked night, I've looked at the leaves, I've looked at the stalk and the branches, and no sign of any kind of insect.
Okay. And the nursery said it could have been frost damage. Well, of course, it's certainly not frost damage now. Yeah, I'm just looking this up because I have a couple of ivory silk lilacs, and they're fine. And I was going to say, you know, it's a few leaves that aren't perfect on a newly planted tree is not a big problem. But if it continues to have foliar problems, then there's something going on. I'm just doing a quick look at what problems they have. They're actually excellent trees. They grow in the urban environment. They're small, you know, perfect suburban urban trees, fragrant flowers. They've got everything going for them. Problems. Okay, powdery mildew, but that's not happening. If it's planted in a less than ideal. So is it in full sun and is it in a well-drained soil, the tree?
It's definitely in full sun. It's on the south side of the property. Well drained, well, that could be a little bit questionable in that it's, you know, originally clay soil, so it does retain moisture. But we did put in, I believe, 3-4 bags of triple mix and mixed it together. And also we did that little bit of an edge that's elevated so that the water would sit around the tree. I've only watered it as required, so if it looks like it's dry, I will water it until I get about an inch of water, then I let that soak in, and then I'll water it again and let it about an inch and let that soak in.
Right, so the equivalent of, so it's about 10 gallons of water is what we want to give trees when they're newly planted at least once a week. If there's no rain.
Well, it's definitely received that. And with all the rain that we've had, too.
Yeah, it's been a good spring that way.
Yeah.
So this is a bit of a tough one. I'd be inclined, in your case, to take a couple of these leaves back to the nursery where you got it from. You know, like I'm saying, there's very little. What about fertilizer? Was it fertilized when it was planted?
We did put one bag of mix that had a little bit of tree and shrub fertilizer in it.
Okay, so yeah, so no more fertilizer, but that wouldn't have been a problem otherwise, because, I mean, over-fertilizing can be a problem, so don't think that fertilizer is going to solve this problem. Leaf miners are little insects that chew the inside of the leaves so that the leaves end up looking like stained glass. But that doesn't sound like what you've got going on there.
It's definitely
puckering.
Not that.
And when you open up the leaves where they're puckered or curled, there's nothing in there. No little tiny insect causing that puckering?
None. No.
Because that's usually when we see puckering on leaves, an insect is in there and the tree responds by growing around the insect. It's so interesting. Like they compartmentalize the insect away from everywhere else. So with something like that, or the other option, if you can take a good close-up photograph, send me a picture. But option one is take some leaves back to the nursery and see what they say, because I'm a bit stumped with what that might be.
Okay. Okay.
And if you want to send a picture, Charlie's email is c.dobbin@mzmedia.com. And that will get the job done there.
Yeah, sorry, Linda.
I will do that. But also, okay. I just wanted to mention, someone thought it could be possibly a fungal disease in the soil that came with the tree.
No, I doubt it. There's not. I mean, yes, there's something called verticillium wilt, which is actually a disease that could, but it's pretty unusual. Wilt and premature leaf drop is what verticillium wilt will do. And yeah, they're pretty good trees. Like they rarely have stuff going on with them. So it might just be, you know, something environmental that's affecting it. But and you're right. If it, hopefully you got a guarantee on that tree so that if it doesn't survive, you can replace it with a fresh one.
Okay.
And yeah, so good luck with that. Thanks, Linda.
Yeah, good luck with that. Yeah, thanks for the call, Linda.
I appreciate your help. Thank you.
Okay. No, our pleasure. And yeah, indeed, again, that email, c.dobbin@mzmedia.com. Numbers again, 416-360-0740. Toll free anywhere else in the province of Ontario, 1-866-740-4740. We are now going to Michael, who is on the line from Toronto. Welcome to the Garden Show, Michael.
Good morning, Dean and Charlie. Thank you for taking my call. You're both very, very good at doing what you do, and I really appreciate the opportunity to call in. So I have a problem with a ginkgo tree. It's quite mature. It's probably been in place, planted now, at least 30 years, and it's possibly like a 40-year-old tree. Anyways, what ends up happening regularly, about two or three times a season, is I get like clusters of leaves emerging from the trunk of the tree. This is really a first world problem, but you have to go and take them all off. It looks kind of unsightly. I've looked at many ginkgos here and there, and I don't see this to be like a prevalent issue. So, you know, the concept of the witch's brooms kind of coming out on trees that have been pleached or pollarded. Well, this is just coming right out of the trunk here and there and everywhere. The tree is exceptionally healthy, and it's really growing. It's really quite a beautiful
spot. So when you take those leaves off the trunk, do you use pruners or do you just rub your hands on the trunk?
I'll try to like pinch them off as close into the trunk as possible, and then they come back. Sometimes,
okay, so that's
at least
that's
once,
why
two
you're
times.
You're actually, believe it or not, by pinching, you are allowing that little tiny what's left bit of stem to now grow two stems. So your job next time you see any growth coming off the trunk of the tree is do not pinch, rub. Just rub your hand, the palm of your hand, up and down the trunk of the tree and break off those stems.
Right.
You want to break them off from where they're coming from, and they will not grow back. And you know, like
The trunk is very fissured. If you know what I
know.
I mean.
So well, then get in there and just again, like break it off. None of this pinching. Like make it. Right. You want to break it right from where it's coming from, even if it's coming from deep inside a fissure.
Right.
You know, like really do a yank it off. We see this a lot on honey locust. This time of year, particularly when they've been planted along urban roads by the municipality, and they're just the trunk is covered in leaves. And I always want to stop my car and get out and break all those leaves off, because you don't want leaves growing off the trunk. It's just a waste of energy.
Yeah. Do you know what causes that? Is it?
I don't actually know. I think I've always thought it was sometimes it's genetics. It's the plant has just got this prevalence to do that. But also it's an indication that of the environment. So you've got all kinds of things happening that's making the plant so happy, bursting with growth. It's actually shooting new growth off of an old bark.
Right.
It's good high humidity, proper sunshine, good temperatures. All of that leads to this maximum growth, these bursts of growth.
those.
I understand. Yeah, that makes sense because the tree is extremely healthy. Well, I really appreciate it. Like I said, it's a real first world problem, but it's more annoying than anything. Yeah.
Well, thanks for the call, Michael.
Thank you very much.
Sure. I love those trees, ginkgo trees. Those leaves are great. I love them.
You gave me one.
I did.
It's a ginkgo leaf in stained glass. It's very cool. Hanging on my office right here beside me.
Nice. Well, I'm glad it found a nice little home in your window there. Okay. We have to take a quick break, but we will be right back with more right here on The Garden Show.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Hey, welcome back to The Garden Show. I'm Dean Holland here with Charlie Dobbin. Now, one flower, I mean, there were many, many flowers listed in that theme song there. One of them I did not hear that came up in conversation this morning with my wife and I was ranunculus. And she reminded me when we were going through the market this morning early, just before the garden show in Collingwood here, she saw some ranunculus and said, oh, you know what? That's what I wanted in my wedding bouquet all those years ago. Oh. But it wasn't out yet. Is that something we can grow in this climate? Can I grow ranunculus?
Sure, but it's not a hardy plant. It will die in the winter. So it's something that you would bring inside to keep it alive. And you're right. Like, the whole idea of flowers and bridal bouquets is interesting because we kind of similar to what Michael was saying, you know, first world problems. Here our growers have gotten much better when it comes to cut flowers at being able to provide any flower any time of the year as a cut flower. Whereas 20, 30 years ago, no, you could not get tulips in bloom except in the spring. But now you can get tulips in bloom 12 months out of the year because the growers are able to provide that for us. So that's what we do in the first world. We worry about having the right, you know, everybody's perfect flower available year round.
We went with things that were a little bit more seasonal, and we got married in May, right? And so it was only the difference of a month. But anyway, we were just wondering if it was something that we could grow here, and so it sounds like it is
for sure as an annual.
Okay,
beautiful in a planter.
Yeah. Apparently, bugs are a bit of a theme today. So we've got Sam on the line from Bradford, who looks like they have a bug question. Welcome to the Garden Show, Sam.
Good morning. How are you, guys?
Good morning. And you get your garden wings, my friend.
Welcome.
There you go. Welcome.
Bradford.
Sorry, yeah, what do you got for us there, Sam?
Okay. My wife has been planting house plants for about 4 or 5 years in the house. They're in the front window, and she always gets these little black bugs in them. She's tried everything. She's went on YouTube. I'm not much of a gardener, so I'm kind of calling on her behalf. So she's been buying these little plastic, she puts them in each pot, and they kind of have the little bugs stick to them, and she's tried everything. She just can't get rid of these little bugs. I don't know what they are. They're almost like little flies.
Right. So they are actually little gnats, like G-N-A-T-S, fungus gnats. They look like fruit flies. And if you bang the side of the pot with the palm of your hand, a whole cloud of little tiny gnats will fly out of the soil. So what you need to tell your wife is using the stick, they're called sticky sticks, which is the like fly paper, bright yellow. The gnats are attracted to the yellow and then they get stuck in the glue. And that does eliminate some of them and is very effective. But the other thing she has to do is she has to stop watering so much. So instead of keeping the plants constantly moist, she's got to pull back on her watering, allow the plants to dry down between waterings, and you will find that the population of gnats will decrease because there will be less fungus in the soil when the soil is drying out. So that is the other way to eliminate fungus gnats. So less water and keep the sticky sticks everywhere. And by trapping the adults, they can't lay eggs.
Well, I appreciate that, guys. First time that I've called in. I love your show. I listen to it while I'm driving to work. So I really appreciate it, and I will let her know.
Thanks so much for calling. And don't be a stranger.
Yeah, and we Duncan apologized. He says that was Stratford, not yes. Bradford. Yes. So we got that. Yes. Now we have before we take a break again, we can get to our next caller, which is we talked about this lady earlier. We have Wilma on the line from Holstein. Welcome to the Garden Show, Wilma.
Good morning, everybody.
Well, sounds like you're out in the wind.
I love the garden, so I'm sorry. Yes. I just wanted to add a footnote to that comment about the red beetles on the lilies.
Yep.
I have not eliminated them by any chance. Mm. I was out yesterday, and they are still on my flowers. But the lilies are, this year, growing in spite of the beetles, and I'm hoping that I get some bloom off them.
Did you spray them?
My real question today was aphids.
Mm-hmm.
I have a family member who has a greenhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And last year, she managed to just do it manually. But this year, she said, it is almost beyond manual.
Mm-hmm.
The leaves are just literally covered with aphids.
Okay. So is her greenhouse like a hobby greenhouse just in her backyard, or has she got a commercial greenhouse?
No, it's just a backyard hobby, and they don't keep it going all year long. It's just a seasonal thing.
And right now, are there plants in the greenhouse still?
Yes. They grow stuff in the house all for the season, but they right. also have some outside, and that's what she said. She made sure that there was nothing visible on them when they planted stuff outside, and so far the outside ones are doing well. But it's yeah. what's in the greenhouse that she can't keep ahead of. They have planted marigolds and something else. I forget what the other one. Hopefully
yeah.
to avoid that, but right. it's not totally working.
So you know what I would do? So is her greenhouse kept open to the outside, or is it screened, or how does she cool the greenhouse?
They have fans, and they have windows. They
that
have
open.
It open during the day, but usually close it up at night, especially in the weather-related type thing.
You know what I would do? I mean, obviously, we know that we can control aphids with pretty non-toxic sprays. Simple sprays like soap and water will kill aphids.
That is the other thing. They don't want to use any commercial stuff if they can avoid it.
So you can make a soap and water spray. It's 40 parts water to one part soap. But in a greenhouse, it can be a bit challenging because it's often so warm in a greenhouse. Soap and water is quite hard on plants if they're extremely warm, so at your high temperature. So she'd have to, if she's going to go the route of spraying soap, do it very early in the day or as the sun is going down, so the temperature is cooler and the soap and the sun don't cause, you know, more stress on the plants than the aphids are already doing. But you know what else?
Recently, she used some and apparently the plants went a little black.
Exactly, because it's too hot.
They were going to lose a lot of them, but they are coming back.
Right, but that's why you never spray soap and water on a plant that's in the sun. So that's why if we're using soap and water in a greenhouse or even outside, you do it on a cloudy day, you do it early in the day or late in the day. But you know what else I'm thinking, Wilma? Tell your friend or your niece or whoever this was, get in touch with Natural Insect Control, NIC, based in St. Catharines. Or she may even be able to find this at a local garden center. Get some ladybug eggs and take them home. Put those ladybug eggs into the greenhouse. They will hatch, and the baby ladybugs will eat the aphids so fast you'd be amazed. And that works really, really well.
Okay, on that note, ladies, I do have to take a break. Thanks for the call, Wilma, and we will be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round.
This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yeah, back with The Garden Show here on Zoomer Radio. I'm Dean Holland here with Charlie Dobbin. And Charlie, we have a caller on the line from Markham. We have Elaine. Welcome to The Garden Show, Elaine.
Good morning.
Morning.
Oh, Charlie, I want to know about my peony. Should I transplant it in the fall or now?
The fall.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah, if you transplant it now, well, of course, it's flowering right now, I would think, or just about finished flowering, perhaps?
No, it's just about going to open by the end of the week.
Oh, there you go. So you definitely don't want to transplant now because you'll never see those flowers if you transplant now. Those will shrivel up and fall off. So wait until the fall, like September, early September. And remember, when you if it's been in the ground for a long time, it's a very large tuber under there, and you want to use a fork to lift it up. It comes up. It's just a really odd looking bunch of roots with little fingers sticking off. And you want to try and transplant the whole thing. Or at that point, when it's out of the ground, you can chop it up and make multi-peonies if you want to. Similar to a potato, you need to have a bud or an eye on whatever chunk of root that you pass on or stick into a pot for sharing.
Uh-huh. Okay. Okay.
Okay.
And it's something about How deep is it I planted?
Not deep at all. The tuber, when you're transplanting, you see what depth it's at now, and you want to keep it at that depth. Of course, it's going to sink a bit after you do your transplanting, so plant it a bit high. It's literally right on the surface of the soil. You almost can see the tuber. It's just below the surface, and that way you get flowers. Any deeper, you won't see flowers at all.
Okay, thank you so much.
Okay. You're very welcome.
Thank you, Elaine.
Okay.
Yeah, love those peonies. Now, is it true, I think I've asked you this before, but if you transplant them, I was told by somebody years ago that if you transplant them, you can sometimes not get blooms for a few years.
It's usually because they're planted too deep when you don't get blooms.
Oh,
they
okay.
They should, you know, peonies are lovely perennials because they just last forever and ever. Some perennials are short-lived, but peonies will live for, you know, 100 years. They're just wonderful. And they should bloom every year. There's no reason in the world why they won't bloom unless they're planted too deep.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So, because sometimes I've wanted to shift them around. I'm amazed at the difference between one side of the driveway and the other side of the driveway here, just because of the sun pattern, seems to make a huge difference. It's incredible. Only about 20 feet apart.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's you can really see that very, very evident when you've got dramatic sunshade. So listen, I'm not sure what we're going to do next week. Next Saturday, when we're doing the garden show, I'm going to be in New Brunswick.
Okay.
That the as you know, hosting Healing Gardens documentary series. We are off to New Brunswick on Tuesday. We're going to St. Andrews by the Sea. And
oh, wonderful.
We're going to be attending Kingsbrae Gardens, which I'm very excited about. I should still be in New Brunswick next Saturday morning, so we should be fine to do the show. But Air Canada is messing around with my flight. So I'll certainly be in touch and let you know what we're going to do. But hopefully I won't have to do the show from an airplane, because I don't think I could pull that off.
No, that would be quite the endeavor, wouldn't it? Yes,
exactly.
And speaking of Healing Gardens, that's coming up every Monday, right, on Vision TV?
That's right.
Tomorrow?
9 p.m.
Monday. Yeah.
Yeah, Monday, 9 p.m. every Monday. New episode airs on Vision TV, also on the web. You can go to visiontv.ca and watch episodes that have already aired. I think we're up to number 4 now, 4 or 5, I forget. But either way, do enjoy the show. Everybody I talk to is really learning a lot and finding a super show to watch. It's just very peaceful and very healing as a show goes as well. Thanks, Dean. Thanks, Duncan. Love you. Carlos, congrats on the marathon. And thanks to all our great callers. Couldn't do the show without you. See you again next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.